Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
My goodness.
Do. I'm ready. Hello, everyone. Hello. I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, the weekday podcast. I swear it happens. It really happens where we make today make sense. In this case, I am slightly unprepared because I was chatting with customer service, as one does with 2 minutes to spare.
Were you?
Before
what,
the
what
show.
What is the issue? Mm-hmm. What's the issue?
I'm trying to buy an electric vehicle.
Oh, are you? Wow.
Possibly. Wow. Yeah. We'll discuss.
When you listen to Marketplace tomorrow, maybe you've seen it already in the news. The Ford Motor Company with its whiz-bang F-150 electric Lightning pickup truck, mm-hmm. the one you and I were talking about the other day, mm-hmm. they've got 100,000 pre-orders.
I mean, literally, my son had to drag my hot little hand away from the computer. I was like, I'm just going to go ahead and put down a deposit on that right now. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
I know. Anyway.
Yeah. 100,000 of them. Get in line, Molly.
My version, my version of hot vac summer is like, Mama needs an EV. I don't know where this came from.
Mama needs an EV.
As one does. Anyway, hello everyone. Welcome to my life, yes. Currently Hi. In progress, and also yes. the podcast.
That's right. On the podcast, yes. I'm Kai, by the way. I know we're 2 minutes into this thing, and you don't know who I am yet. But if you don't, then why are you here? Hollowed out shell of a Thursday is what we call this. Although breaking the fourth wall, we had a conversation in our meeting this morning about whether or not we ought to keep calling it hollowed out shell because things are looking better. And I think there was some non-committal nodding from the hosts. I think we're enamored mm-hmm. of this construct, but we'll see. We'll see.
You know, we were like, I don't know. I feel fine.
Yeah. We'll see how today goes
and decide from there. Let us know what you think and how you have been feeling lately whether you need so many feelings or just like the news, because we can do that too.
Yeah. We can do that
too. And then we'll make you smile.
Speaking of which, why don't you hit it?
I would like to commend to you two stories today. One involves the European Union continuing to do the work on holding tech companies accountable that the United States most certainly is not doing. In this case, Amazon, and I was trying to figure out actually if this is the first time this has happened with Amazon under the GDPR, which is the big general data protection regulation. That is the European Union's set of privacy laws that went into effect around 2016. Mm-hmm. They were such a big deal that we made a drinking game out of it. Although, as I say that, I realize that we do that kind of a lot. But it was the first one. The GDPR was the first thing that we talked about so often that we had to turn it into a drinking game. So privacy regulators have now proposed a fine of more than $425 million against Amazon over what it's saying are unspecified, or rather the EU is refusing to say what the specific allegations are against Amazon, but they said that they're not related to the cloud computing business, Amazon Web Services. So either, you know, one of its many, many, many other businesses, but shopping or devices come to mind, especially since we were recently talking about Sidewalk, its effort to kind of do the low power connection of everybody's devices, which even if it in and of itself is a relatively low privacy risk, doesn't maybe need to happen by default for everybody. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was fascinating that the GDPR is so – we're still trying to decide who we're mad at, what we think, and which part of which party, if we can agree that each party is now two parties, really, which part of each party is where – when it comes to regulating big tech. Meanwhile, you know, the EU is 4 years in and already levying $500 million fines against companies like Amazon.
Can I take a serious turn here for, like, honest to God, just like 45 seconds? And it's not fair to put a time limit on that answer for you, but I'm going to. Here's the thing. And I was listening to, I guess I was listening to The Daily the other day. And they had had an underwriting credit talking about the 25th anniversary of Section 230, which we've talked about many times, and how Facebook wants regulation, and we've talked about that. Do you think we're going to get meaningful regulation of these technology companies in, say, the next 5 years?
Well, in 5 years, maybe.
Huh.
I mean, 5 years is a solid maybe, which is remarkable. We do not do this, you know?
Yeah.
We don't regulate. Like, if you look at all of the companies and all of the things that they, look at how hard it was just to deal with the Sackler family and
yeah, and opioids. OxyContin and all that stuff, yeah.
And
yeah.
OxyContin and all of that. And the family itself will still essentially not
be
have to do much.
Yeah.
Be billionaires. Yeah. You know, the tobacco industry still essentially exists and does fine. Like, we don't punish. Yeah. We don't do this. It's not part of our culture. And so it is very possible that all regulation and behavior change, I wouldn't be shocked to see it come from other countries. I really wouldn't.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
That sounds kind of defeatist.
No,
I know,
that's fair.
But
totally fair. Totally fair.
Yeah.
All right. All right. You got
5 years,
one?
Maybe.
Yeah,
2 years, no. I do. I just think that everybody should read this story because it made me feel like, oh my God, we're so right, which I love. It's just a nice feeling that we should celebrate. Because we've been talking a lot about the tax gap and uncollected taxes and what a big deal that is. Especially as, in fact, just as we were coming in here, there was breaking news today that some bipartisan group of senators, and I have lost track of which one, have come up with a, you know, infrastructure proposal that wouldn't require raising taxes.
It's the G10 they're calling themselves. Yeah.
Oh, that's not self-important at all.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. No, but I stepped on you with the key thing. The key thing is, oh, we're not going to have to raise your taxes. And the challenge, of course, is that we don't have enough money now to pay for what we want now, let alone fixing all the stuff that's broken that we got to fix for the future. And that's the that's the defining, well, one of many defining flaws of this country. We don't want to pay for the stuff we need.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me crazy.
It's really true. We've been talking about afterpay a lot, like this idea that, you know, Americans just want to like buy now, pay later with 0% interest.
Yeah. Totally.
And there's a whole business being built around it. And honestly, it seems like that's what we would prefer to do with infrastructure. So yes, it is. Yeah. It seems absurd that we're talking about, you know, up to a $1 trillion infrastructure plan without raising taxes. However, what I think we landed on in some large part with this conversation about the tax gap is that actually we have the money if we collect it. And so I was interested to see that former U.S. Treasury Secretaries Timothy Geithner, Jacob Lew, Henry Paulson, Robert Rubin, and Larry Summers wrote an op-ed in the New York Times that was published yesterday saying, hey, give the IRS money to collect these unpaid taxes and we will have up to $7 trillion over the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Then talk to me about an infrastructure plan where you don't have to raise taxes.
Yep.
And I'll consider
just collect what is
because I'm the president.
Craziness. Yep. I'm the president. I'm in charge. It's a good piece in the Times.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's mine, and it's under the category of companies really are scummy. I don't know if anybody out there remembers MoviePass, but it was a couple of 3-4 years ago. It was this company where you gave them $10 a month, basically, and you could see as many movies as you wanted. The challenge, of course, is that a movie ticket costs like $15, and MoviePass didn't have any great deals with the movie houses. They just went and bought movie tickets and let you use them, which, number one, is just a dumb business method. But number two, it turns out they were super, super scummy in, because they're defunct now, because their business model stinks, right? But they were super scummy in what they were doing, right? They would like, and this is according to reporting in the New York Times and some investigation by the Federal Trade Commission, right? They would like mysteriously reset your password so you wouldn't be able to use the app. There would be some kind of like your app wouldn't work and your account would be shut down, or you try to cancel and it would get reinstated and there would be a problem and you get worried. They did all kinds of scummy stuff. And I'm like, companies don't care whether you live or die. That's an exaggeration, but it's an extension of that thing I've said many times about capitalism. It's craziness. It's craziness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this wasn't point of fact. It was owned by a publicly traded entity, so it was like on the markets and SEC and all this stuff. Bananas.
It was
crazy.
Utterly shameless. It was utterly shameless. Did you see, actually, speaking of good stories that are related to this, Kevin Roos actually had an outstanding piece that I sent around to almost everybody the other day about sort of the end of the millennial lifestyle subsidies.
Oh, yeah.
Which includes companies like this. Because these companies basically thought, okay, if we can get tons and tons and tons of growth, just users, then money will follow. And so we will subsidize them or kind of like sign them up, but get them to not use our service. In these dramatic ways, and it'll be totally ridiculous. And then all of a sudden, we'll have to charge them the real price or else go out of business. And that's like, it's dying
and
hard.
And that's what's totally, and that's, but that's what's going to come around with Uber, right? Because once we open back up again and people are Ubering all over the place, Uber will at some point say, we're not going to subsidize like we have been. And an Uber ride is going to be, instead of $6, it's going to be $23. And everybody's going to be like, oh, wait, no, this is expensive. I don't want to do this anymore. You know?
Yeah.
And
any minute now.
Surprise. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Surprise.
No, that was a good piece.
So sorry.
Yeah. Totally.
Yep. It was a good piece. And this was all part of that, except that they got caught, right? They tried to amass this huge growth really, really quickly so that they could afford it. And instead, it just was like unfeasible from the get-go.
Yep. Totally.
And I bet they won't get in any trouble at all to bring us right back to where we started.
That's right. Oh,
God. You can see why everybody's so mad all the time.
Carlos, do it. Do it. There we go. Okay, I'll go first this time because yours is actually better, and I wish I had found it because it's like a map thing, and I dig maps and all that cool geographic
stuff. We'll share it.
So, well, yours is awesome. I'm going to do mine real quick because, you know, I found it anyway. It's kind of neat. There is going to be, at the Strong National Museum of Play up in Rochester, New York, there's going to be a National Archives of Game Show History, which on the face of it is like, oh, come on, game shows, that's dumb, right? And maybe to some degree. But if you think back to like the quiz shows of the 50s, early 50s and mid 50s, those were kind of awesome. If you think about Jeopardy, if you also even think of iconic things like the wheel from Wheel of Fortune, that's what is going to be in these archives. And I just think that's cool because I'm a history guy. I'm a little bit of a pop culture guy. And I think that's kind of interesting. You know,
that's pretty cool. That's a really defining American thing too. Yep.
Ken Jennings is in favor, by the way, and he's the umpteen time Jeopardy champ.
Oh, well, that's the key. Jeopardy is totally back, by the way. I had a little Memorial Day get-together, and there were, three teenagers there and two, an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, and they all sat around, I am not kidding, for, an hour and a half watching Jeopardy.
Really?
Watching Jeopardy.
Do we know who the new Alex Trebek is going to be?
I think they're still in the rotation, but I think we should just keep manifesting LeVar Burton, obviously. It's just going to be...
Okay.
Right. Look out, bro. You're right. You're totally, You know what? Maybe we should just watch them all and find out.
Just going to say, because I haven't seen any of them, so I really should not pass judgment. So other than that slightly agonized sigh, let us move on.
All right.
All right. You're up.
This is just kind of awesome. It is pure nerdery, and even the scientists involved agree that it's pure nerdery. But for the first time in over a century, National Geographic has redrawn the world's oceanic maps. Historically, there have been four. Good students could name them: the Atlantic, the Pacific, the Indian, and Arctic Oceans.
Yes.
I read them off of this website. Now there's a fifth. National Geographic has officially recognized the body of water surrounding the Antarctic as the Earth's fifth ocean, the Southern Ocean.
It's cool. Super
cool. And then, according to National Geographic Society geographer Alex Tate, quote, it's sort of geographic nerdiness in some ways.
I'm down with that.
They know it. That is the part, by the way, that stretches from Antarctica's coastline to 60 degrees south latitude, excluding the Drake Passage and the Scotia Sea, according to the National Geographic.
For the real dorks among you.
Exactly. If you really want to geek out, it is the second smallest ocean now after the Arctic Ocean. So there you go.
Oh.
It's just so nerdy and delightful. I want to imagine living
an awesome one.
A totally parallel life where you're just like, what should we do about what appears to be this? I think we just got to go for it. You know, it's a little colder. It's not as salty. It's really different.
Everything's good.
That's what you do at work every day. I mean, awesome.
That'd be a good job.
Right? That's so cool.
Job. Yeah, totally. Totally.
The new job.
So there we go.
Yeah.
There we go.
Love it. That's it. It's just that easy. Yep. We're going to be back tomorrow. Don't forget to sign up for the Make Me Smart newsletter. And in fact, this week, that whole article about the millennial lifestyle subsidy and how it is coming to an end. By the way, the joke that I kept making as I texted this to all my friends was the Gen X millennial lifestyle subsidy was when Dinty Moore beef stew was 2-for-1 at the grocery store. So bite me, millennials.
Is that a joke? I don't get
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like nobody.
I don't get that.
Nobody gave us cheap stuff. Is all I'm saying. So we'd be like, yay, that beef stew that I like to mix with rice so that I don't starve because I only make $300 a month.
Is that the episode title on this one, Tony Wagner?
It's 2-for-1.
Bite me, millennials. Oh boy.
Fine. Okay, now. Whatever. Anyway,
all right. So
it's all in there.
That is
us really
stone cold sober. We're going to have beers or whatever tomorrow, and we'll see what happens. Economics on Tap, the YouTube live stream, 3:30 on the West Coast, 6:30 on the East Coast. Find y'all's time zone in between. Kimberly Adams can tell you when St. Louis is. I don't know.
No one else can.
And that's that.
It's
we're done.
Really true.
Nobody else can. Yeah. Nobody else. Your iPhone could, but whatever. Oh, my goodness. Got a little raspy. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters, also on Make Me Smart Explainers.
Today's program was engineered by, actually, I think, Juan Carlos Serrato, or maybe Charlton. I'm not really sure. There's names everywhere. Ben Holliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Donna Tam is the senior
the
Google producer.
Doc. The Google Doc is kaleidoscopic with people clicking.
It's
in
just
and
people
out.
Clicking everywhere, clicking on this, clicking on that. Somebody's going to type something. The executive director of On Demand, who's clicking on everything, is Satara Nieves.
As they question their life choices. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they're like, why goodness. Do we let them have the microphone?
Don't know.
Kai just changed his LinkedIn to looking for work.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.